It does bring us today's message about Rahab and the spies. Before we get into that, I want to tell you about a book that I came across and that I read. Actually, it was really cool. My friend put on Facebook, I just read this book. It's amazing. And if anybody wants a copy, if they leave a comment in the Facebook, I will buy them one. And so I was like, yeah, free book. I'm totally going to do this. And I'm like, it was really bad. I thought, well, she's working in Singapore. She has money. I'm going to ask. Because normally I feel bad. But anyways, and then she sent me the ebook link for it. And she says it was because she's normally not that excited. So I'm like, okay, this book must be pretty good. So she sent it to me. And so I read and I plowed through it really quickly. I thought, wow, this book is really good. I even gave it to our life group full of guys who are really serious readers. Actually, none of them are, but they plowed through the book as well. I was really impressed. It's actually published in the States, which is why it's pretty expensive to get a paperback for £15. But if you buy it on iBooks or Kindle Store, it's a lot cheaper. But it is a fictional tale, so don't read this and think, oh, it's like the Bible. It's not. It's a fictional story. But it's kind of tells the story of Rahab. And what happens to her afterwards. So if you don't know, we'll talk about Rahab today, but Rahab was living in Jericho, and then she was saved, and she joined the Jewish people. And she ends up marrying this guy, Salmon, and he's really pink. She ends up with this guy, Salmon. It was really difficult. They had to swim uphill. I could make jokes about Salmon. Actually, I feel really bad now. I don't even know him. Okay, I'm not going to make fun of him anymore. But what's really cool about this book is, you know, sometimes when you read in the Old Testament and you go through Numbers and Leviticus and you're like, there are a lot of laws here. These are really weird. How does this relate? What's really cool about this book is it draws out her perspective, being a foreigner, and coming into kind of this growing Israelite nation and these laws that come up. And every time she comes across one, the guy, Salmon's like, oh, yeah, it's another one of God's laws. He just has to have these things, and this is why we do it. And then she'll be like, that's amazing. That's such a great law. That's so beautiful. And you're like, what? That's so weird. But it really helped to bring out the laws of God and make it very personal, and also helped to explain sometimes the perspective, both the growing Jewish nation and also being an outsider. It's a fast read. It is also a love story, so don't expect a lot of, I don't know, bloodshed or like spaceships. You're going to be disappointed. And it's based around the character of Rahab and of Salmon, and it helps to draw on some of those things. I totally recommend picking up a copy. James is right. He loved it. Yeah, he thought this was fantastic. It's a really great book. So a lot of us have read it. I was tempted to read a portion out today. Because of time, we're not going to do that. So that sounds pretty cool. So if you guys want to, check it out. You guys can buy it now if you want. I won't mind if you take out your phones and buy. That's pretty cool. All right, but let's go from there into the story of. I cried in the book too. Just to let you know, I know. I do cry in a lot of things, cutting onions, cutting shallots, Sound of Music. You name it, they're all the same. Sound of Music and cutting onions. You should see it when I'm cutting onions while watching Sound of Music. That's painful. So let's go into the story about Rahab. It's in Joshua chapter 2, actually. If you guys need a Bible, you want to raise your hands and someone will bring one by to you. How's the sign? Does anyone need a Bible? No, everyone comes prepared. Oh, wow. Look at that today. All right. And just to let you know, I don't have the whole passage up here on the thing. So if you're like, I don't need a Bible, we're just going to read it off. I only have excerpts. But let me start off by reading from Joshua chapter 2. I should set some background because we just come into Joshua. So what happens is Moses has died, and Joshua is now leading the people, and God says, don't be afraid, be strong and courageous, head over there. And 40 years ago, they came to this promised land, and they went in, the spies said the land is good, and everyone's like, these people are too big. I'm too scared. We're not going in. And then God said, you guys have so little faith. just go back out into the wilderness, and basically go back in the wilderness until they die, and then the next generation comes up. So they're back here again, and Joshua says, okay, I'm going to send some spies in. I want you guys to check out the land and see what's like, and I want you to especially go to Jericho. Jericho being important for them to check out because Jericho had really large walls, very, very thick walls. Archaeologically, they've dug it up. They found existence of walls, and at first people were like, oh, how could walls exist so strong? But actually they found them. They're like, wow, this is pretty impressive. It's always cool when you find archaeology and you're like, oh my gosh, that totally matches with the Bible. So this city was really well fortified, and of course, no one knew how they would be able to attack. If you know anything about strategy, it's very difficult to attack a fortified place. I guess if you've watched Lord of the Rings, you would know, right? But then they had like millions of troops and orcs and catapults and crazy things like that. So anyways, the Israelites didn't have that. They're barely even trained soldiers. So they're like, how are they going to do this? And so Ash will talk about that next week. And so this is about the two spies who go into Jericho to have a look. And the two spies head in there. So let me pick up from chapter 2. And Joshua the son of Nun sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. And they went and came into a house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab and lodged there. And it was told to the king of Jericho, behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come here tonight. Bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said, true, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to Jordan as far as the fords, and the gate was shut as soon as their pursuers had gone out. Picking from verse 8. Before the men lay down, she came up to the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there is no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house and give me a sure sign, that you will save alive my father and my mother, my brothers and my sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. And the men said to her, our life for yours even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. And she said to them, go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterwards you may go your way. The men said to her, we will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie the scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather into your house your father and mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anyone goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in this house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you have made us swear. And she said, according to your words, so be it. Then she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. I mean, basically, the heart of this story is about faith and about having faith, even though you don't really see what's going on. Actually, in the book of Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 11, the author lists out all these sort of heroes of faith throughout time. And Rahab is actually listed amongst them. So in Hebrews chapter 11, actually gives a great definition of faith, which is faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. In the NLT, it says, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And then about, 30 verses down, it says, by faith the Rahab, the prostitute, did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Now, it's pretty interesting because actually Rahab is a prostitute. And generally, we don't think of prostitutes as people who are of good esteem or of trustworthy or are problem-free or good people. And yet here in the Bible, she gets mentioned a couple times, and she was always called Rahab the prostitute. It's kind of a really sad kind of title for her. That's how I remembered. But it's interesting because when she's mentioned as Rahab the prostitute, it's always about something good that happens after that. It's the idea that even though she is known as a prostitute, that doesn't define her. She still somehow is redeemed by God. In other words, there is no sin so bad or no life that is so bad that cannot be redeemed by God, that can't be saved. And that's something pretty amazing. And this is where we want to talk about actually Rahab's faith. Now, you have to begin to understand, okay, well, Rahab, suddenly she has this amazing faith in a God who she has never met. She doesn't know this God, actually. She doesn't worship him. She's never hung out with the Israelites. What does she know about this God? It says right in that passage, she says, I know that the Lord has given you the land and that the fear of you has fallen upon us and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. What she knows is that the whole city of Jericho, everyone's afraid of these Israelites. They're afraid of them because of what that God can do. She says, for we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. She started hearing these stories, and if you think about it now, this is pretty amazing. Right? So get this. So God leads the Israelites out of Egypt, and then he takes them. He could have taken them around the Red Sea, but he decides to take them to the Red Sea so that they would almost face certain death. Then he does this miracle where he parts it, they get across, and all the Egyptians, the kings and the chariots are destroyed. And that's like, oh, that's great, we saved them. But actually God is like, he's playing chess. This is not just one maneuver here, but he set it up for the future. Because now the city of Jericho is afraid because they're hearing about what God has done. And you begin to understand what is happening is God is setting out a history. He's setting out a relationship between him and the people. These things that have happened between him and the people throughout time, that is part of that history that they have together. And why is that history important? The history that you have with God helps build your faith. See, faith isn't about observing something. It's not just about seeing something and then being able to watch it all the time. Faith is actually very relational. And one of the amazing things about God is that he decides that he wants to express our life with him relationally through faith. In other words, that we trust him. Science would say, look, we know that something happens because if we observe it and we can continually test that that will happen, if I drop this ball and it drops and then I do it again and it drops and it always drops, then we know that there's something that pulls it down or that something works. So that's how they discover gravity, right? They observe something and they discover it. And so actually they begin to trust and believe in these things called science. They're the observable laws of the universe, they might say. With God, it's similar, but actually it's a relational aspect, what we have related to God. And the more we know God, the more we trust him, the more we can depend on him, the more we know who he is and what he's like. Rahab barely knows this God. Actually, she's only heard of some things that he's done. He has not conquered Jericho yet. They're still safe inside this walled city. Why would she trust this God? Sure, the whole city's full of fear. They're like, okay, well, something's different. Something's powerful about this God, and we'll see. She begins to understand that actually the God of the Israelites is bigger than the gods that they worship in Jericho. In Jericho, they worshipped all sorts of gods, and very common things were child sacrifice, things like that. That's pretty much the norm at the time back then. But she could see already that there was a difference between the God of the Israelites and the God that they worshipped within the city. The other thing that she understands is, she says here, as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Rahab begins to admit that the God of the Israelites is God of heaven and earth. He's the top God. He must be the highest of the high. And she decides to put her faith in that. And at this point, it is completely blind faith because she never saw any of those miracles. She's only heard about them. She's not even really seen what the Israelites are like. She doesn't know what their army is like. She's just going by faith. Now, what happens first is, right, the king comes and he's like, have you hidden these people? Where have they gone? Okay, so the first question I always ask, well, why did the two spies go to a prostitute's house in the first place? Like, that's so dodgy. Okay, should they're not on vacation. So one of the things we understand is actually Rahab's house was built into the walls. The other thing that we get the feeling was that it was pretty close to the gates, which is why she would send them out. And so if you're a spy in your new place, you go into the gates and you're like, okay, well, if we need to stay someplace for a few days, let's go someplace that we can make a quick exit. And so they probably stop by there, and they probably don't know it's a prostitute until they go inside, and she's probably like, so? And they're like, oh? But for some reason or another, God seems to prompt in their hearts that this is a right place to be, because they end up having a conversation. And in this conversation, somehow with Rahab, they don't ask to sleep with her. They don't try to, you know, take advantage of her. Somehow, in this conversation with these two men, there's a relationship of trust that gets built up. She's not paid. She's not told, like, hide us and we'll give you this money. Somehow, there is this understanding. How did that come about? What we can guess is actually when the two strangers came, when the two spies come in, they probably treated her. The way they talked to her was different to everyone else in Jericho. And she knew they were foreigners, and she probably knew right away that these people are not from around these parts. You know, like sometimes you meet someone who is not from the UK, and you feel like, wow, these people are so different. They're so much friendlier. So one of the things people always said when they meet an American, they say, oh, you're so friendly. I love your accent. Can you say awesome? And I'll say... awesome. They go, oh, so cool. Can you say it again? I'm like, I'm not a trained SEAL, but. And then you have that real sense of kind of interest and excitement. I think for these two spies, when they come in and they're in a prostitute's house, the way they interact with her somehow reflected their beliefs. Actually, they reflected God. And in this reflection of God, she suddenly is like, this is something different. And there is a part of me that wants to believe in this and trust in this. Because she risks her own life by hiding these spies on her roof. That's a big jump, right? Just because some nice guy comes in and says, awesome, really cool, doesn't mean you're going to protect them when the authorities show up and say, hey, did the American come in here? Because we want to arrest him. Say, yeah, fine. You'll be more scared. She immediately has a greater faith in God than she does in the people around her, in the government that's already there. There's a trust that she has in a God she barely knows compared to what she has seen and been part of. And that's kind of our first point. Your relationship with God, your faith in God, how you live, how you understand who God is, that is reflected to the people around you. And you're going to come across people who are tired of the way this world works, who are frustrated with corruption or injustice, and they're looking for someone else. They're looking for something else. And then when they talk to us and meet us, they don't say like, wow, you are a better person, but there should be this greater sense of actually what you believe in makes sense. There is a truth in that. I didn't get permission from my wife for this story, but at work, she was talking to some people, she ended up quoting a passage from the Bible, but she didn't say, oh, well, the Bible says this. But she said, you know, it's not what's on the outside of a person that makes someone unclean, but it's what comes out of a person, right? It's what's in their heart. And that blew them away. So this person who was not of a Christian faith, there's two people she told this to in passing. The first one, not of Christian faith, was like, oh, that is really deep. And it was one of those things where it's instantly convicting because it was like they were so concerned with the outward. And they're like, oh, that truth hit home. The other person she talked to was just like, agnostical, I just don't really believe. And then after Fantor, she's like, wow. You know what? I believe in God too. You know, I don't like religion, but I believe in God. And you got to understand that in these things, in this truth, that there is this yearning that people have for something greater. And somehow these two spies who showed up here with this prostitute treated her in a way that was different. Why? Because they don't have prostitutes in Israel. They don't treat women like that. One of the commandments is do not commit adultery, right? It's the idea, well, you don't sleep around. That's not how you roll. And they show up in this place, and they treat her like this. And it's like, whoa, something is different about both your God. Because the second thing that she's saying is, look, we make a promise to each other, and I have enough trust in you to keep that promise, and I have greater trust in your God that this God will keep his promise. That is amazing. And that starts with that reflection of when they meet these spies, that life there. Is this blind faith? No, because she's heard some stories, she's experienced some stuff, but there is still this element of risk. There's still this element of taking this sort of step of faith. Well, the second thing that we have come to is, right, so she says, okay, look, promise me that if I keep your secret, you guys won't do anything, and you'll spare me and my house and my family and anyone I can get into this house. They're like, yeah, promise that all you gotta do is tie this red piece of string by your window, and that's like, we're good then. Which, if you ask me, sounds very dubious. So I totally imagine it like somehow they pull out this cord or like they have this scarf, say, oh, just tie this to your window. And then when we come back and kill everybody else, we won't kill you. You'll be safe. And like that's a pretty big step of faith, right? Like I would have wanted something else, like, oh, give me your gold ring or something like that. Leave your child behind or leave one of the spies here. Something of value. And like a red cord as... not that convincing. And yet, they decide to say yes. She says, okay, well, fine. We'll go with that. The thing is, she has to leave this outside her window the whole time. It's an outward sign of her inward faith. So like everyone else who comes by, all the clients or her family, they might say, why do you have that string hanging out your window? She could have put it away at any point and said, okay, I'll only bring it out when I see them attacking. But she ties it there and says, well, this is my faith, and I believe that I will be delivered in this. See, once the spies leave, she has nothing. Only the word of these people she just met, and only the trust that somehow this God will be faithful. Now, first of all, the gods in that time, the gods they believed in, were never faithful. You know why? Because they didn't exist. So what they would do would they would sacrifice these babies so that they would have a good harvest. They would sacrifice these babies so somehow they could increase their fertility or something like that. And so it's like you would sacrifice these babies and then nothing would happen. And then you would feel like, oh, I've disappointed the gods somehow, so I must do some more. In other words, the gods at the time were completely unreliable, unfaithful because they're not real. They don't exist. It's just chance. And yet here she is, and she's putting her complete faith and trust in the words of some actions that she's heard about this God, and that's enough for her to have that faith and that trust. And that is huge. Think about our own faith, our own trust in God. Do you believe him? I think a lot of times we want to just poke and prod around until we hear something from God that we like, something that makes us happy, as opposed to actually hearing him and obeying and following. For us, a lot of times, we have an outward faith that only reflects the parts about God that we like. But when he begins to convict us, when he begins to challenge us on right and wrong, we want to look away from that. We don't want to do that. Understanding this scarlet cord helps us to see, actually, God, we we need to trust you more. It's pretty cool also because when we talked about the tabernacle, right, last week, and we talked about scarlet, and here the word scarlet comes up again, which is, oh, coincidence again. I guess they must really like that color scarlet. But it's interesting, right? You have a scarlet cord, which we know symbolizes the blood of Christ. And somehow hanging this cord from the window gives her salvation. Have you noticed there's a trend here? What happens at Passover? Yeah, they put blood on the doors, right? Something on the outside to mark that what is in the inside is safe and sealed and secure. Same thing here, right, with Rahab. She puts a cord on the outside to mark that whatever's on the inside is saved. For us, it's the same, actually. What is the mark on our lives that demonstrates to people that we are saved? If there is no difference in our lives, then what is the reflection of our faith? How is the truth that this is what we believe? The last thing is action. In James chapter 2, 25, they actually mention Rahab again. And it says, in the same way was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way. For as the body apart from the spirit is dead, so also faith apart from works is dead. Now, there's a couple actions that Rahab has to take, actually. The first is she has to hide the spies. Then she has to misdirect the other people because she has greater faith in God. And so here she is, and she's saving them. But there's another action that is asked of Rahab. Well, it's not really asked, but right, she says, okay, well, if I get anyone in my household to come and stay in my house, will they also be saved? My father and my mother and my mother's brother. And then they're like, the spies are like, yep, anyone who's in here is safe. Now, Rahab is a prostitute. If she's a prostitute, it means that somehow she does not have enough money. Her husband must have died or something like that. She's a widow and she has no means to take care of herself except by selling herself. You have to understand, back then, the treatment of women was much, much worse. I suppose it's similar to what we see with the Boko Haram. There's a very, very low esteem of what women can do. And so somehow she's in this place where somehow she needs to tell her parents and her relatives to come and stay in this house, and that's where it's going to be safe. All the shame she has as a daughter, or the unwillingness she has to somehow speak up and convince them, but she needs to somehow convince them to come in. You want to talk about evangelism? That's pretty much as hard as it gets, right? Talking to your family members about that you believe something where there's such little evidence for. And yet here she is, and she's desperate because what she knows is that destruction is coming and that her family members need to be saved. And you can tell then there must have been this urgency and there must have been a lot of convincing and discussion about, like, no, look, just trust me, come here. If we are here together, we will be saved. I can imagine the conversations from her mother. He says, how can you believe in this thing? How will we know that we'll be saved? Let us instead sacrifice to Moloch, because he'll save us. Because I'm sure at this time, when the Israelites started coming closer, the sacrifices within the city must have gotten worse and worse. Everyone's panicking, so they start crying out to their gods to somehow save them. And yet here is Rahab, and she's like, but there's probably only one God. Actually, there's only one God that is trustworthy and true. See, this blows me away. When God talks about faith, right, he talks about the people who have this deep belief, even though they haven't seen. There has been no real sign, right? She hasn't seen any of these miracles. She hasn't seen any healings or any prophecies. And yet her faith is so deep and so true. And what is her faith in? Is her faith in that God is, I don't know, just going to destroy her later? No, her faith is actually that God is trustworthy. that God will keep his promises, and that also God will deliver her. I think for us, we have to be challenged by this, to figure out where our faith and our actions combine, how we live. We've been talking about this more and more, but sometimes it's not about our identity, actually. It's not about who we are or what problems we have or what we struggle with or whether we're even called a Christian or not. But actually what matters more is how we live. Rahab, she's defined as a prostitute, a woman. That is her identity, trapped in the cycle of what we would say sin in a sinful life. But her actions, the steps that she does from moment to moment, those define her actually more, don't they? Here she is. She decides to hide the spies. She asks them to save her. She hangs this cord as a symbol of her faith. She cries out to her family members to come in to be safe. And in the end, she's defined not as a prostitute or a woman, although she's referenced as that, but she's defined by faith. See, that changes the way we think about life, actually. Instead of trying to figure out what makes us happy or what career is going to fulfill us, or what spouse or whatever thing is going to make us better as a person, we start saying, what does it mean for me to live by faith, expressing the love of Christ to people? Your actions, your day-to-day, your conversations with people, how you deal with good times or how you deal with bad times. The three questions that I kind of leave you with is, first of all, do you stand on God's side? Rahab looked at the city that she was in. And by her eye, she would say, we are a strong people with strong walls. But she saw past that, and she saw the way they worship, the way they treat one another. And she said, I don't stand on this side, but I stand on the side of a God who I barely know, but want to know more of. For you, what side do you stand on? Do you stand on God's side? And I think for us, the biggest challenge is, do you stand on the side of God or do you stand on the side of self? Do you stand for what he believes in and what he stands for, or do you stand for what is easiest and most comfortable for us? As our world is escalating towards more and more pretty much imminent destruction, it's pretty hard to turn back all the kind of changes that are headed this way. We have to ask ourselves, are we actually standing firmer with God? Or are we still just choosing for ourselves? The second thing is, what's your scarlet cord? What hangs from your life that defines you and identifies you as a follower, as a believer? And I don't mean that you wear a little cross around your thing, you wear a big belt that says Jesus on it, or you carry you have a tattoo that says I love Jesus on you. That's not what I mean. But is there something definitive about your life, about your attitude, about your heart, so that people know actually this person is a believer? And I think it's not enough just to sometimes say, well, people can see my example and they will know. There is also that moment where you need to speak, to pray for them, to invite them to church, to invite them for a coffee, to talk about their lives, to hear, to listen, to extend an arm. Now that's on one side, but the other side is for us as believers to step up, to be a voice for the oppressed, for the poor, the widowed, the hungry. Okay, and those are easy because we always talk about the poor and the hungry. But we need to make an action for that. But I want to push in another direction. When we look around, and I'll tell you, this is the worst for us Chinese. We'll look at the kids in the school, and we'll want our children to be the top, and we don't care about the other kids. That's not our problem. And yet we know that actually education and helping other children get better grades helps everybody. And yet our selfishness is about protecting our own self instead of trying to help the others. We don't have a heart of compassion for people. But we have a strong heart for ourselves, don't we? It's hard, but as we start to think laterally and we think other ways to figure out how we can bless the people around us, especially families which are struggling to make ends meet, or other students in the school who you know might need some help, you begin to say, well, okay, actually, God, maybe there are ways that we can bless this community, that we can bless people, that we can somehow stand out and be identified as something different. There are ways, there are opportunities. But we also need to have that action. How is your faith expressed? And a lot of times I know the easiest way is we say, well, not the easiest way. In our heads, this is how we think. Oh, they'll know I'm a Christian by the way I live sometimes. And then the other time, the way I live, I just hope they don't remember that, and that's fine. But how is your faith actually expressed? I'll tell you the biggest thing that actually people look for is consistency in your character. Right? One of the biggest problems people have with Christians is that we're hypocrites. Right? They feel like we can do anything we want and we can't say this. But actually what they were looking for is consistency. What I mean by consistency is the honesty to say, look, okay, this is something that I shouldn't have done. I regret it. The best way you can explain this is with kids. Okay, so I try as best as I can to be consistent with my children, but it's almost impossible because there are times when I will just be in a bad mood. I'll have a bad day. So like up until, I'm trying my hardest, but I know I'm not really going to have a break till after June or until after end of May. So I'm at like my threshold for kindness is like at its top. So like if there's anything that comes that's not expected, like get short fuse, like really irritated. And so like my kids would be like, can you play with me? And I'd be like, no, actually, I wish I did not have to, but now I have to play with you and I'm going to be really grumpy about it. And it's really horrible because actually what it's demonstrating to them is that I'm totally inconsistent. Sometimes I'm nice, sometimes I'm not nice. And they can't tell. And one of the things is learning how to be consistent is not just saying be nice all the time, but when I'm not good, I actually have to say to them, hey, sorry that daddy was in a really bad mood today. And this is why, and I'm sorry. They understand that consistency is in the consistency of your heart for who you are as a person. And it's really hard because it's really hard to do that with your kids because you always want to have the authority, prove to them that you're the boss until your wife comes in. And then but it's the same for us with our friends. Well, we can't talk one way this time and then talk another way another time. And one of the worst things is we say something nice to their face and say something less nice when they're not there. And then say, oh, I'm not complaining about them. I just think, sometimes. And then when you see them, oh, yeah, it's really great to see you. I really like you. And then, yeah, I like them, but just not that much. Right, so you guys got to know that thing. So you're saying, that's not very consistent, is it? That's not very fair and adequate. But the other part about expressing your faith is actually talking about it. About who you believe in, about God, about the truths that you read in the Bible that stir your heart. So one of the things that Fan did when she's able to express that truth out, that's because she spends time with God and then that's there. And she shares that out and it's like, wow, that's a truth, not just for us, but that's a truth for everybody. And we need to be moving to this time and to this place where we are stronger in that ability to express the truth of God to people out there, to be stepping in faith in this way. And I think a lot of times actually in keeping up with world events and being able to talk to your friends and coworkers about them and how your faith relates to that and where God stands in that. Those are the challenges that we're going to be facing in the coming years, but we have to start learning how to do that now. It's something that you just have to practice. And you have to do it, and you have to express it by faith and grow from there. Do you stand on God's side? What's your scarlet cord? And how is your faith expressed? Should we just spend some time in prayer? Lord, you know, you are our Savior and our King. Lord, let our faith be expressed out, Father God, to not just be believers, but be your disciples. God, when we see the faith of Rahab, when we see how she followed you with such little knowledge of who you were, yet she went all in. God, let her story challenge us, Father God, to ask, what is our demonstration of faith? What do we do with our lives that demonstrate that we follow you, that we believe you? Give us the joy of understanding what it means to stand on the side of you, even in the face of, even when it's different than popular opinion, but that we choose to stand with you. We thank you in your name, we pray. I'll just invite the worship team.